Welcome to the Global Village International Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley. Tonight, Brazilian-born New Age recording artist Kaliani with a timely new music video release. Now appearing on YouTube, featuring beautiful images of our planet and a vocal message with the theme of oneness and a true awakening when we all finally let go of that which no longer serves us. Kaliani, inspiring humanity with alternative visions and tools for global soul transformation. We'll be taking your phone calls at area code 718-766-4421. Now, here's our Global Village host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome, everyone. It's a pleasure to have you here tonight. We have a wonderful guest tonight, a very inspired lady who has just amazing videos on YouTube. Her current video is called One Earth. I encourage you to go there, not now, but after the show, and have a look at this amazing production. My special guest tonight, I want to welcome you, all my friends in the Global Village, as we go a journey across cultures, creativity, and consciousness. And I'm your host, Douglas James Cottrell, and today we have this extraordinary lady, Kaliani. And she is with us going to explore her, or we're going to explore her inspirational work, her mystical melodies, and her heartfelt mission to uplift humanity. So grab a cup of tea, settle in, and listen to the show. I'm joined with my good friend and co-host, Doug Bentley, and also we have our co-production assistant or manager, Jack, here with us tonight. Paul, if you're maybe looking for him, is off on a personal journey, taking care of some friendships that in Tennessee, and I think he's going up to Kentucky, I think he said. So that's where he is tonight. Anyway, tonight we are here with this lovely lady who has an angelic voice, in my opinion. I've been listening to her music most of the day today. And we're going to talk a little bit about her production company and herself as we get into this interview. But first, let's say a warm welcome to Kaliani. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, same here. Thank you for having me.
So you must get asked a lot. How did you start your production company? Where and how did you get this inspiration to do this wonderful work that's empowering people and giving them this angelic music to inspire them? Where's that point, and where did that start?
Well, I think it would be a long story. I think everything starts from birth, right? We have a certain karmic dharma that, you know, or as we call at USM, our soul curriculum, you know, and we travel through this journey of discovering who we are and what we are here for. What did we bring? It's like a process of remembering, I feel. It's remembrance. And it started early in my life, but it wasn't, more of my curiosity about what's on the other side of the veil, of the true nature of reality beyond the five senses. I was a very curious child and teenager, and I explored a lot spirituality, especially in a country like Brazil. But the production company and the music came later in life. After the dissolution of my marriage, I went into deep prayer. It was at the edge of the dissolution where I felt called to immerse myself in prayer. I prayed a lot as a child and an adult as well through my childhood, and my mom was very focused on it. She was born in Portugal and a devout Catholic, even though she fell out of love with an institution in her 20s when she read a book about the Holy Inquisition and she was horrified, she decided to not force us into the church, but she believed in the power of prayer. She felt deeply connected to Jesus and Mary, and so she sat with us in bed every night and taught us to pray. And at this crisis in my life, I had four young children, and I felt really alone and a bit lost, and I did not have family, extended family in the U.S. I was the only one. And I felt like I need to go back to my roots, because after my marriage and the children, my husband at the time was an agnostic, and he was against religion, and he didn't understand the difference between religion and spirituality. I was very spiritual, but to protect him, because he was a child of a Jewish father and a Christian mother that put him in a place where he couldn't choose. He had half of his family killed in concentration camps in Germany from his father's side. I felt a lot of compassion for him, and I just kind of sat on that spring, you know, of my spiritual thirst, you know, that was there all the time. But at the dissolution of marriage, I fell deep into prayer, and a lot of interesting things started to happen. And I started having visions and dreams about this. And it was a prayer that is a Christian prayer. It's apparently comes from France. It's called Caritas. And I had only heard that prayer a couple of times growing up, and I wanted to do that particular one, but I didn't remember, and I never memorized it. So I called home, and I wrote it down, and I did that prayer every morning before I put my foot on the ground. That was the guidance I felt. And after I went to sleep, after I pulled my feet off the ground, I would do it again. And I did that for weeks. And then I started having visions and dreams about this entity, this spiritual being, deity or goddess, however you want to call it. And she was Asian. And I had no idea who it was, why she was there, but little by little, she started revealing herself, and there's so many details that I think it would take way more than an hour. So I'm just going to say she revealed herself as Kuan Yin, the goddess of compassion, that's very well known throughout Asia, and she's been like a guiding light for me. And after that, I felt guided to continue my education with a program, a master's program in spiritual psychology. I had a BA from UCLA in psychology, mm-hmm. and wanted to continue, and I did that. And at the end of my first year, I had to write a living vision. And in that living vision, you know, we go into a contrition act, you know, where however we feel connected to spirit, we can light a candle or an incense or go into meditation and empty our minds and then allow something to pour through with the intention of, you know, knowing what we would like to be doing with in co-creation spirit in the next 5 to 10 years. That was an assignment. And what came through was to create documentaries and conscious media. So that is came strongly through. And I didn't know anything about it. I've never taken any courses or anything about media, but I knew there was power in telling new story, creating new constructs of reality, and that's what happened. One thing led to another, you know. After energizing the living vision, which is a process we do at ESM, which means you sit with that writing, which is like 5 pages long, and you meditate with it, you envision it, and it goes through 21 days of that process. And we went on vacation, and in the interim, I met the producer of Secrets of Love, and he was conceptualizing it. He didn't even have a name, and he knew that I, you know, I could help him with it. And he felt, we met at Self-Realization Fellowship, which is, I don't know if you know the work of Paramahansa Yogananda, but I was studying meditation there and met him there. So he invited me to do this documentary, which was interesting because I had almost forgotten about the Living Vision. And it had been a few months, you know, but that was it. It came right away, you know, that invitation to co-executive produce a documentary on love and relationships as an evolutionary force, you know. So that was my first initiation into this production.
Well, as I listen to you, it sounds like it was already scripted, and step by step, the incremental changes in your life led you to where you are. I was particularly interested in that. As a child, you were with your mother praying every day, and I believe you know, when you keep praying, coincidence, chance, and good things happen. When you forget to pray, they don't happen. And with your devoted mother and your keen interest in prayer, I could see that the doors were opening, so to speak, and then some tragedy came into your life. And as that seems to be, you know, Kellyanna, that seems to be one of the criteria for people to get on a spiritual path. There always seems to be a setback or something like that that changes their direction. And for you to keep on going, getting out of that deep hole, if you will, or that darkness or that uncertainty, and then moving forward with your prayer, and then you have a visitation of a spiritual entity, an angel, a spiritual being that guides your path. You weren't afraid of this being, and it kind of introduced itself little by little. You know, there must have been both some intrepidation and some excitement that you were being guided from above. Any idea why this is a lady from the East at all?
I did not understand the connection, and I was told that I had incarnations in Asia, and that I was later on by seers and, you know, oracle people who have the ability to, similar to you, from what I've learned about you since yesterday, they have this ability to tap into the soul records, the Akashic records. Mm-hmm. And they told me I had incarnations in the past in Asia, and I spent my life devoted in a temple to her. And something like that, spend my life in devotion to her. And so there is this deep bond that I have with this entity. That's what I was told. Interestingly enough, you know, I am 70. I did my genetic analysis, and I'm 99.8% Portuguese. And so very Western European, and my family is very old. You know, my step, my grandfather, my mom's father was a nobleman with a very long history in Portugal. Like, there's not a lot of mix. And, but I found out that I have 0.2% Chinese in my blood. It's very low, but I remember my father's dad, my grandpa, my father's father, mentioning that his great-grandmother, so it's like my great-great-grandmother, met my grandfather in Macau, I don't know, in a Portuguese colony when he was visiting, something like that, and he married a Chinese lady.
Wow.
So I do have tiny.
Yes. There's something in that soul DNA.
Something of Asia. Yeah.
Very good.
Well, there are no coincidences.
So that's an intriguing connection. That's fantastic. So when that makes perfect sense to me. And how if in a previous experience you were devoted in a temple, I could see that listening to your music. You're singing from more than just this present here and now. There's something deep inside of you that's coming through. And, from a soul level, I believe, because you have an amazing sound. And again, we're talking about this one earth. And for everybody, that's want to listen to this lady, let's listen for a minute. Stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to comment because we were talking a little bit about the show. You're out in location. You have these beautiful scenes behind you. You're on location. These are not maps or anything, digital backgrounds, I believe. You're in these beautiful places and you're drop dead gorgeous. You just look like you had a makeup lady standing right beside you. Your hair's done. You're in this beautiful flowing white gown. Tell me about that. There's a lot of ladies who are wondering,
actually,
how the heck did you do that?
I have to say, I had a lot of resistance to putting myself on this video. I thought it was about the planet, and I said, maybe we can make a collage of things, and I tried different things, and I really, and a friend of mine who was a huge producer back in the day, he lived in Malibu, he's now in Florida. He got on the phone with me and he said, "You can't do that again. Your friend wants to see you. This is a beautiful song. Please get out of there right now and drive to North Lake. And it's the most beautiful area and it's near Yosemite. There's three lakes there. I was in one of those lakes near North Lake. I cannot tell you exactly because they have strange names. And I had never been. And my producer and friend, Wolfgang Amadeus, was there. And I said, "Wolfie, what do you think?" He says that in 3 days the snow is going to fall and we wouldn't be able to get the beauty of what's there. So we went online and we looked, and it looked stunning. And he said, "Leave now, just go. You'll be there in a few hours, couple hours." And I said, "Wolfgang, what do you think?" He said, "Let's do it. Let's do it. This is overdone. We should have done this already. Let's do it. Overdue." So I got out of my resistance. I grabbed a few white dresses that I had hanging on the closet, and I just drove there with him. We stayed overnight, and in the morning we left. We had no idea where to go. I woke up like at 5 a.m. to just, make sure I could, shower and do my hair and makeup myself. And I tried a few different outfits, and I said, "What do you think? What do you think?" And we chose this little Greek dress that I bought in Greece back in the day. It looks like I had never worn it. It was like more like a costume almost. And I just said, "Okay, this is it. Let's do it." And we left, and we started looking for a location without having any idea where we were. We're just driving around, following around the lake with a map, and all of a sudden I said, "It's here." And I said, "There's nothing here." I said, "No, it's here." He said, "Stop the car." He said, no, let's keep going. He said, "No, please back up. Stop.
I love
trust
it.
Me."
And this is great.
It was right there. And I couldn't, it's almost like it lit up. I couldn't really see, but something told me there's something there. And that's how it was. So we got out of the car, and there was this beautiful grass field next to this beautiful lake. And that's what that was. We winged this one. This was, interestingly enough, the one who took the least amount of filming, but it was the most complex to edit because it's the first time I'm singing with a comprehensible language, and there's lyrics with words in it. And it was a challenge. The other two are like a blank canvas, and it's just pure heart tones, you know. And I can paint it however my heart and soul wishes to see it come through, without concern with a particular, you know, the words have a weight, and you can see how the video develops in a way that it's always addressing some aspect of the scene that I am, or the sentence that I'm speaking at the moment, right? And it's quite challenging.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It looks like you had a gigantic production crew. The videos, the way the haze is in the lake, the background, the lighting, the way the light strikes your body, your movement. In one of the videos, I would say tall grain or grass. It's golden. Your hair is golden as well. It's like, I don't know how you did that, but you said, here's the spot. You got out. And it's just, from a technical perspective, it's just perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. Yes. And Douglas, I can tell you this. It's divine alignment. Because this was shot by somebody who's not a videographer on an iPhone 13. Okay, this is divine grace, right? Because it was meant to be. And we only knew one thing. We knew that there's something called magic hour. So we shot in magic hour, which is at sunrise or sunset, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was shooting against the sunset, which is usually counterproductive. You usually get a silhouette. But somehow we didn't. It is what it is, and we had people call in interested to speak with the director.
Yeah.
You know, to find out how they did it, and he said exactly what I said.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
you're gonna have to learn how to fib a little bit and say, oh, we had you know, tons of people. The production costs were enormous.
No, not at all.
We had to scout out this scene. It took us a long time, you know. But it is beautiful, and I'm poking a little bit of humor at it. But it is, and it is exactly when folks, when you go on the YouTube to see this video and the other ones, you're going to be very impressed at the production of it, and then more so at this lovely lady's voice, this sound. It just comes at you. I mean, people some people who listen to it already are saying it is soothing, and it soothes their soul. I mean, I was trying to write a little bit of a blurb for you. This went out in our newsletter, will go in our newsletter here to our spiritual organization, as well as it's gone out to all the people following me on my newsletter. And so the point being is that, you know, this is a beautiful scene. But think about this, my friends. This lady went someplace, slept overnight in a small, uncomfortable place, got up, did her own wardrobe, makeup, whatever, and found the location, et cetera, and then became the talent to sing this lovely song. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And you put it all together, the way you're talking, it's like, matter of fact, just did this, just did that. Yes, that's the spirit moving you, and you're in sync. You're in sync with that. Mm-hmm. What I was going to ask you,
I would say that she did have a production company, but it was not in the physical.
Yeah, there was the sort of the ghost people.
I like
they
that.
Were out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There you go. So when you sing, I'm just going to step back a bit. Were you when you were a child? Were you singing? Like, were you in the choir or church, or did you sing, you know, all the way through your childhood? And or did you start this when you were
not
adult?
At all?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, I never sang. No, and I never dreamt of being a singer either. I actually had a lot of resistance. You see, this song came from a place of honoring this divine feminine presence, you know, that came to my life and guided me in every step of the way. In a very interesting way, I felt I prayed to the Lord, and the lady came, and Lady Kuan Yin is her name. And it's very beautiful because I think there is an emergence of and recognition of the divine feminine that has been happening in the last decade or so, or a couple of decades, in a sense, on a more spiritual sense, because, you know, in the last 3,000 years, the divine has always been a masculine archetype in most faiths and religions, not all of them. And I think it's a sign of the transition we are in, which is including now the sacred feminine into the experience of spirit. There's not just one way or another, it's all of it together, right? So mm-hmm. when I was in this deep, I can't explain if it's in this deep embrace with this divine presence in my life that was lingering for quite a while. In the first year, I couldn't eat, actually, and there's something that happened when I was a child, since you brought back childhood. I had an out-of-body experience that actually an Indian guru said that I had a samadhi experience, a type of samadhi, when I was 8 and a half, because I got home and I was usually a very creative and active kid. And that day I just felt like laying in my bunk bed. I slept on top. And it was the middle of the afternoon. I just went to my bed and I lay down and I looked up into the ceiling and I saw the cosmos there. And I was taken into the stars and I could see the earth from above. And there was this recurring question in the back of my consciousness asking, what was there before? Show me before this and before and before. And I kept going backwards in time and also going farther and farther away from the planet. And then I saw all the planets in our, you know, now I know what it is. When I was a kid, I just saw this, you know, planets rotating around the sun and in elliptical shape, you know. And I kept asking, show me before, and I kept going farther away. And then I could see the planets begin to disappear one by one. And then I started seeing galaxies, you know, clusters of stars everywhere. And I kept saying, show me before, keep going, back. I kept going back. And then the stars started to disappear and the galaxies started to disappear one by one, like popping. I always call it pop. They popped and disappeared. Everything disappeared and I found myself in this black void, you know, alone. And I just sat there, and I thought to myself, well, this must be where God is. But I was there alone, and I couldn't see anything else. And I sat, and I felt a sense of peace. I wasn't afraid. And I, you know, in my innocence, I had no programs, no, you know, I just said, you know, was there anything before God? If so, show me what it was. What was there before God? And in that moment, my body, my little spirit, soul, whatever, came rushing down to the bed again at best speed, and it crashed. It was like, it was so fast, like
you bounced.
I came back into my body.
Yeah,
I bounced up, like waking up from a nightmare. You know, when you see in the movies, like you just wake up and you sit up in bed, and my heart was pounding really fast. And I woke up my eyes, and I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember anything about my life, who I was, what name I had. I didn't remember my sister, my grandmother, my mom, anybody in my family. You know, at that time, my father was no longer married to my mother, and It was a family. It was just my grandfather, my grandmother, and my mom, and the two of us, my sister and I. I couldn't remember anything. I just sat there terrified. Some people say these experiences of loss of identity are very blissful and you feel one with the universe. Well, I didn't. I felt terrified.
Of course.
And I don't know how long I was sitting there, but eventually I found my way down. And I ran to the street and I started running because I knew something was not right and I wanted to remember something. I knew, and you know, it took me so many years because I repressed that memory because I was so terrified. When I finally remembered my name and my mom and everybody, and I felt a sense of love again, a sense of belonging and connection, there was a feeling of entering paradise. I felt it wasn't until my 40s when I actually was able to question all of this, and or my 30s, late 30s, where I started to remember. And I said, you know, I need to understand this. And why did I come rushing into my body again when I asked what was there for God? And the answer is because they wanted to show me without God, we don't have love, we don't have a sense of belonging, we don't have a sense of connection. There's no relating. There's nothing that we love that feels good. And God is the glue. You know, the grace, the joy, and somehow without source, God, you know, however we want to consciousness, however you want to call it, that was the answer. I asked, what was there before God? And there was nothing.
There was nothing.
There was a vacuum. There was a vacuum in my heart, and there was nothing I could remember, nothing existed, nothing meant anything. So,
well,
yeah.
that is profound. First of all, that you were a child. Second of all, that you kept saying, and what's before this? What's before this? And you kept going further and further out into the galaxies, into the cosmos, to that point of origin. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching in my mind these trips, because when people tell me their dreams, I see them. And being out there, and it's like you're floating in blackness, nothing around you. No wonder you were terrified. And when you came bouncing back, it's a classical soul out of the body, but also disconnected from the body. Usually there's that so-called silver cord that connects the soul to the solar plexus when the person is asleep or meditating and the soul's out gallivanting around the cosmos, and that bounce back is like the elastic band pulls you back into the body, and that's typical mm-hmm. and traditional when you felt that bounce. It's a big bounce. Your whole body jumps. But you were mm-hmm. so far away. You were, and mm-hmm. when you came back, you were disoriented for a while because you were in that soul mine, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You were just stuck, mm-hmm. and it took a while for you to get back into that mm-hmm. To be sealed back in your body. Normally when a soul comes into a body, as you may know, it gets sealed in by the angels or whatever, and so, you know, you're there for your whole life. But you broke away from the seal somehow, and then you came back. This is extremely unusual. I've not spoken to anybody in my 50 years of investigation where they've had this experience, especially as a child. So no wonder when you came back, you were, of course, terrified. And it must have been the loneliest of the loneliest feeling, not to feel any love or wherever you were. But you came back and mm-hmm. you were running around, you know, you're doing all the things to get oriented. How long did that sort of, just being curious now, that time, that unawareness or that disconnected, how long was that, minutes, hours, a day?
You know, I get asked that often, but I don't really know, but I believe mm-hmm. somewhere within an hour or just a bit over an hour. I'm not sure because how long I was gone, I can't tell. And
yeah, you're never
present
moment.
You know, the experience. Yeah, and then when I came back, I was just staring in my room, not knowing the name of anything. I didn't know that a window was a window. I didn't know where I was. I don't know if that was a bedroom. It was an erasing of my memory to a degree that is incomprehensible. Like, I had no understanding of anything. I didn't know what I was. It's not even who. What is this? Like, where am I? There's absolutely no meaning to anything, no words to anything. Everything was erased. So, yeah, that was terrifying. When I was up there in the void, I was peaceful. It was not until I crashed down and I had no memory of myself, no memory of my mom or my family, who I was, or a sense of belonging, right?
Complete disconnect, yeah.
Disconnect, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm wondering now if this wasn't when you somehow got hold of this angelic voice of yours, that that was the beginning, that you wrote in this consciousness, and you ended up with this angelic voice. Let's listen a little bit to, this is Namu's Invocation by Kellyanna. Again, absolutely astounding, beautiful. I have heard this voice before. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after this commercial break. Again, I'm producing the show. And by the way, friends, I've seen many of you are calling in. I've seen several of you are in the switchboard, and the switchboard is showing your numbers, and then it's canceling them out. We're having a little problem with the platform, so we apologize for that. We'll be right back after this.
Known as the Akashic Field. Dr. Douglas James Cottrell is one such individual. The field is like a celestial library of all our thoughts and actions. Since the dawn of time, science is demonstrating that through this energetic field, our minds are connected to one another despite our perception that we're all separate. This is why the great religions of the world teach respect, compassion, and tolerance. They depict the field as the book of life, the source of inventions, inspiration, and insight. In the book, Conversations with the Akashic Field, Dr. Cottrell offers you practical advice from the Akashic Field so you may live a life of peace and prosperity. Go to douglasjamescottrell.com and click on Shop. There you'll find books, meditation, and other spiritual advancement materials.
God?
What's my purpose?
What do my dreams mean?
What are miracles?
What are spiritual abilities?
Was I in a past life?
Who is my soulmate?
What is meditation?
Are your thoughts racing around on what life is or how to live it? Slow down. Find answers in Dr. Douglas James Cottrell's book, Secrets of Life, now available at douglasjamescottrellstore.com or Amazon. You think about you and your family's health every minute, every day, not just when sick. We believe healthcare should bring results and rejuvenate the body. That's why Dr. Douglas James Cottrell compiled some of his best tips from his readings into a book, The Complete New Age Health Guide, Volume 1. From nutrition, anti-aging, and skincare to serious disorders and diseases like autism, PTSD, and cancer. Find out more at douglasjamescottrellstore.com or buy a copy on Amazon today.
Welcome back to the Global Village International Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host Doug Bentley. Call in with your questions about tonight's topic, An Evening with Kelly Yanni, a Brazilian-born recording artist with a new single release titled One Earth, a message of humanity's oneness with our planet, reminding us that we're all a part of the same planet race, one family, and the need to liberate ourselves from the illusion of fear from everyday society. Call us at area code 718-766-4421. Now, once again, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. And for those people who are listening in the archived version of the show in different countries around the world in different time zones, we are grateful that you're tuning in to the Global Village Radio Show International, and we look forward to your emails and your comments on social media. This broadcast will be rebroadcast around the world in the archived version at your time zone, as you know, if you've been there before. If you're new, just go to my website, douglasjamescottrell.com, and there are banners or links that you can find your way back to the Global Village Radio Show. We also have other social media coming up. We have a new Zoom production, which is video and audio live streaming. And we hope that Kellyanna will be on very soon in our Zoom version of the Global Village podcast. We were talking just before the break, Kellyanna, about your mystical experiences. These are quite profound and very unusual, but somehow in different parts of the world, I've been talking to people. A little child in Granada in Spain had similar experiences. Her family thought that she was, you know, in need of some medication. Matter of fact, they were seriously going to put her in an institution. And by chance, I happened to be there in Granada, and I was doing a workshop for 300 or 400 people. And the parents came over in great, you know, desperation. And I looked at the child, and she was looking at me, and I saw that she was looking over my head. And I said, "Oh, can you see the colored lights over my head?" And she said, "See," she was talking Spanish, and I was talking English, and I had an interpreter. And she said, "See, see." And I said, "You know, azul and verde, you know, blue and green." And she said, "See, see." And the parents were going, listening to this conversation, they were like startled that we, the little girl who was somewhere around 8 or 10 years of age, was seeing the things, and I'm seeing the same things. And I'm, of course, the great, you know, the visitor, the Dr. Douglas Cottrell in Spain, you know, my reputation preceding me. And here's their daughter conversing with me as if we're, you know, brothers and sister kind of thing. And so that always stuck with me. And also the fact is, just at the end of the interview with the little girl, and I was telling her different things that she was being able to see, like ghost people, and she was able to perceive in different dimensions, similar to what you're talking to us about tonight. At the end of it, I said to the parents in a very, you know, matter-of-fact way, I said, "You know, your daughter is an angel. She's a very evolved soul. You should be honored to have her in your family." I did that on purpose. Mm-hmm. And with that, then they told me, the interpreter said, Douglas, you know, what's going to happen? This little girl is going to see the psychiatrist tomorrow. They were thinking of putting her in an institution. I could not believe that. But occasionally that comes across. Did anybody ever approach you? I guess not, because as you had these experiences, you probably kept them quiet. You didn't really say much about that one, I would believe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I am not clairvoyant. I don't see auric fields. I know of their existence. Actually, when I was 15, I read a book by Barbara Ann Brennan. You probably know of her, the one who has the university in Florida, who has been teaching about the auric field, and she was gifted as a child as well. I'm not gifted in the sense that I see auric fields by, just wanting to, or whenever it comes. It's not a gift that I have. I am very sensitive. I'm a clairaudient. I usually hear things. I'm guided in that way. And,
makes sense.
But that particular journey was very different and very unique. And I was thinking when, in the middle of running, when my memory came back, I started to walk back home. And I was thinking to tell my mother, and I thought to myself, no, this, she would never, ever believe me. And, you know, it's not like I had a family that, but I thought myself, I had gone crazy. I was so terrified about what happened, and I was so scared that I wanted to forget. So I thought to myself, I am never, ever going to talk about this. I am never going to think about it again. I'm just so happy to be back. I wanted to be gone. And I don't want to tell anybody because they will think I'm crazy. Even I was thinking I was crazy.
Of course.
So,
of course, you were a smart person. Of course, that was wisdom talking there. Until you got older, and then you had a little more confidence, and then you perhaps heard of other people having mystical experiences. There are a ton of intuitions, being able to see auras, or what we like to do in our International School of the Prophets Zoom Sunday services. We do virtual healing, which is a distant healing, and we find that the sound, the music, amplifies the virtue energy that goes out. But it's a matter of, we don't brag about it. We have people who open up occasionally and tell us their stories, how they've had similar things happen. Not as profound as what happened to you, but they've had little things happen to them where they've been very, they've seen a ghost people in a house, like an old witch or an North American Indian walking around through the house or through the walls of the place. But they kept it secret for all their life because they didn't want to tell people. When in our community, and this is where I think the world is going, these are natural occurring experiences. When we pass away, we all have a soul and it kind of goes somewhere. Mm-hmm. Well, what if it goes visiting friends? And what if some of us get stuck and we don't want to leave? We want to stay in that house for centuries. Then we become, we're haunting our old house, so to speak. But the idea that, that's a perfectly logical that you would not want to talk about people. But, you're talking to me tonight. I'm listening very carefully. And you've had many profound experiences that are, I'll just say higher consciousness experiences, to give it some dimension. And that must come from those times you were in the temple in the East in a previous existence. And that may be why you're having a more profound realization, because you spent, who knows, one lifetime, two lifetimes maybe in these temples, but certainly devout. Mm-hmm. And when you came back and your mother was quite devout, it would be sort of a similar parallel, would it not? Praying every day before you put your feet on the floor and before you took your feet off the floor. That's a very significant practice in temples, by the way. You probably know that. So as you look back over your life.
I did
life,
not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I did not know that.
Yeah, very significant.
That's interesting.
Yeah, in some cultures,
that
babies.
That's what I heard I should do inside my inner mind, but I didn't. I never heard of that. No.
Well, no, you didn't hear of that lately, but you've heard of it before. And that's why in some cultures, babies are not allowed to touch the ground. They're not allowed to sleep on the floor or touch the ground. They have to be kept in the air for a while until they, they congeal. Their soul comes into the body. There's that, you know, when a soul comes into a little baby body, it's the soul's perfectly aware and it says, why can't I talk? I can't move my arms and feet. You know, what's going on? Because it's not, you know, congealed yet or sealed. So I'm sorry you didn't know that, but I just assumed that. But that's a very devout practice. And there you were doing it again. And as I'm listening to you describe your spiritual journey, I can see parallels to my own journey and people I've spoken to. And I'm going to just ask you this one question. When you were out there, you were traveling away from the world, did you hear any sound, like at first, like a grinding sound at all? Did you hear any sound at all, or is it just complete silence?
No,
if you can remember.
No sound.
Okay.
No sound. Just complete silence.
Okay, and because I'm curious, when you came back, let's not go there because that's a long time ago. I was gonna ask you how you came back. Were you on a slide or whether you? But you told me you already snapped back, so we'll just keep on moving there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to the point. Mm-hmm. This angelic voice you have. How did you discover that? You know, did it just pop up one day, or how did you get there?
Well, I had finished that documentary, and then I was helping create a peace platform, and I was supposed to go to India, and that fell through, and I found myself with 2 weeks in my hand where I was going to be able to focus on whatever I wanted, and my children were on vacation with my husband at the time, and I was alone, and I thought to myself, I want to go into deep reflection and meditation and think about this documentary that I want to create, because I was creating things that were other people's dreams, but what I wanted to do was create this documentary about the sacred feminine, and it would be semi-historical, prehistorical, and it would be artistic and poetic, and I had all these ideas about like the Renaissance of the Sacred Feminine type of documentary. And I knew that when I was doing Secrets of Love, and by the way, it streams everywhere. You can watch it on Amazon and Prime. There's a lot of incredible authors there. John Hagelin, Marin Williamson, Marcy Shimnoff. You know, there's more than 20 three or four interviewees that were extraordinary self-help, you know, experts in spirituality and psychology, etc. I knew that it had been very difficult to license music. We wanted to use, like, the songs from the 1970s, and it was extremely expensive. And I knew that music was the soul of any film. I know because I have friends in the industry and sound edits, sound engineers like my friend Wolfgang, who is the producer of this video, or co-producer, and he edited it with me. And he sometimes would be editing TV shows and things like that, doing the music end of it, and I would see, you know, these, you know, famous shows running without the sound, and it felt completely dead, and I was shocked to my system that everything is the soul and the emotions, everything you feel in a film is related to the sound. Without sound, it is dead. You don't even feel like staying in the room. It's just unbelievable. So I thought to myself, how could I possibly license music for this incredible documentary on the Divine Feminine, which I wanted to be poignant and moving and like nothing else that, you know, anyone's ever seen. I wanted to touch people in the right place. I wanted to open their hearts, open their souls to seeing this aspect of reality that has been kind of hidden, you know, for a long time. The sovereign, distinct feminine, you know, as sacred, you know. And I
I got into the deep meditation process, and I was told that I was going to create the music. And I said, no, there's no way. I'm not musically trained. I don't play any instruments other than the Native American flute, which is not really a classic instrument, and a little drum. But I can't. That's, you know, and I've never sung. And this message kept coming. No, it's going to be you. You're going to do it. And I said, no, I can't. So eventually I said, let me just imagine if I were to ever create music, what instruments would I want? What would be the titles of the songs? And I started to just write down things just on a journal randomly, you know? And eventually, one thing happened after the other. I just met this amazing composer at a film. A friend of mine was launching. It was a documentary as well, called The Three Magic Words. And I went to the premiere of this documentary in Beverly Hills, and I was there, and I saw this composer on stage, and I felt, this is it. This is the person I need to talk to, because I need to find a composer. And then, you know, it was interesting. I left my card with the director of the film, and I asked him, can you please give this to your composer? And he actually edited the whole film. He was multi-talented, and I said, I need to talk to him. So he did, and he called me the next day. And I am nervous. I'm like, what am I going to tell him? And he called me again a couple of days later, and I wouldn't return. So I finally got the courage to, okay, I need to tell him what I want. So it's like, it seemed absurd, but I said, I have this vision about this type of music. And, you know, so I met with him, I went to the studio, and that's how it was. I said, listen, are you comfortable composing while I'm next to you? Because I need to make sure you go in the direction I have in mind. So it was like, you know, it was a work for hire. I said, this is going to be mine. I'm going to pay you, and I'm going to leave with the composition, and it's my composition. Like, it's for me to manage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's fine. So I was there for 3.5 hours. That was during a Muslim vacation. And he, at the end, you know, he said, do you hear what I hear? He almost fell off his chair. He said, this is so beautiful. And, of course, I was telling him, go in this way, this way. He asked me to give him 3 samples of music that inspired me to create something of that tonality or feeling tone, right? So I sent him that before we met. And then I was there, and I kept giving him, you know, kind of certain guidance, you know, like, you know, can you add the violins? Can you make this go faster and this slower? And can you add this and that? So it was like I wasn't doing it, but I was telling him what I would like to hear, and he was amazing at delivering. And
well, that's amazing. So you were producing this, and you didn't have any experience.
No, yeah.
Right?
And then he said, what are you going to do with this?
I'd like to make a few comments, if I could, before we go to the calls. But so just
we're having trouble
with
calls.
To call people. To go to the calls, I'd like to make a few comments, if you don't mind.
Yeah, me? Of course. Of course you can.
No, okay. I'm thinking, you know, that your experience as a child, just to emphasize what Douglas said, is very unusual for it to happen as a child to that extent. And I would consider it a great blessing, because it taught you the importance of love. There's nothing without love. And then your experience with Kuan Yin, and for those of you who don't know, Kuan Yin is... And mm-hmm. If you speak to Chinese people, religious Chinese people, they will say that also is a great blessing that she sought you out. Again, about love.
Yeah. Yes.
Your singing reminds me of an elevated form of toning. People who are familiar with toning, it affects your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual selves. So that those are just the quick comments I wanted to make.
Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Thank you for that.
So you're sitting there, you're producing your video, you're instructing this man who has an array of equipment, and you're telling him to speed up this, add that, do the violins. Where was that coming from? How did you know to do that?
You know, I don't know. I don't want to take away from the fact that he's an extraordinary composer. His name is Riz Story. And he is very prolific. He has a large library of rock and all kinds of music. He composes in every genre.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a sense of the feeling, the soul of the song, per se. I can't tell you, and I can tell you. my heart was committed to rebirthing the divine feminine, and this commitment, this took all the fear away, and it guided me, and it was like there was this burning flame in my heart that was speaking to me, basically, and I feel the whole entire process was, infused by this divine presence, the beauty of this divine presence. That's how I felt the direction of the song, and it was just tapping into the source of the beauty of the tones that we can, at least as human beings, with the limited instrumentation we have, try to create something that could even partially compare to actually what it could be in reality, in a cosmic sense, if you could hear the song from higher dimensional frequencies. I bet it would be even a million times more beautiful, but I was tapping into that grace and feeling moved. There was a burning in my heart and in my belly, it was burning deep and strong, and I felt if I didn't do something about it, I would implode with all the love that I was feeling for her. And it was just this way of giving back, of, saying thank you for gracing my life. And I wish everybody knew you how I know you. And how can I make your voice? And if I tried to put it in words, it made no sense. Nothing in words could compare. So I knew this song could not have words, because there's no word in any language in this reality that can explain what I was feeling through the sounds that came through me, right? And that's why it had to have no words. There's no words.
Well, I love it. Let's play a little bit more. Thank you. again, I'm watching the video here on my other computer as we're transferring the music through the microphone. You were in about six different outfits. You were down by the water. You were up on a bit of a hill. You're in the forest. You're in greenery. That's just amazing. All those different sets. And of course, you did your own makeup again, and you were wearing your own wardrobe. Is that true?
No. This was a much elaborate production. I did have a videographer, and I had a side videographer. I had a makeup artist, hairdresser, and we did go to multiple locations through the period of a whole year, actually. There was no rush. It's like, you know, it's been recorded, it's done, and, you know, I always wear so many hats. I was still raising my kids. They were still at home, and it was very interesting to be able to be creative and have all these other jobs that I had to keep going and doing. And so it was like whenever we had a chance, and everybody in the team could leave and go somewhere, and we're all invested in this, and we all had, you know, certain contributions to make, ideas about location. Oh, let's go here and there and there. And I said, yeah, this looks great. I think this would work. This would be beautiful, you know. And the wardrobe, I actually, I had a seamstress put together two of the dresses, and the two others I bought online. And it was kind of a slow process, you know. But basically, there is an arc of a story that not many people can understand. But if you understand archetypes, and if you understand, you know, a little bit of the language of the feminine, and it's basically the black dress is the mourning of the divine feminine's mourning over the loss and the destruction of the planet. You see, because she's in the desert, and basically that is the sense of, like, the desecration, you know, the things we've done that have hurt our own home, this infinite source of life and food, you know, and water and beauty, and how much has been destroyed, right? And then it moves into the red dress, which is going under water, and it's like a period of restoration, and it's like the soil and the cenote. This is a cenote in Mexico, and we're filming at 7 a.m., and I'm wearing a full dress, you know, and there's two divers there, and the videographer was a diver as well, so, you know, it was just beautiful, but, you know, this is another part of the story, which is like a period of gestation. Like, you're in the womb, and she's in the womb recreating the earth. And then when she comes out, it's like the white dress, right? And it's like a period of peace. And the images are more harmonious and beautiful. Like, we're on the beach, and we're on the forest, and everything looks lush. So basically, you know, when she's in the black dress, everything looks dry. There's the cracked earth, and when her veil goes over it, the flowers bloom. So basically, it's the healing of the planet, you know, the restoration of the planet through the rebirthing the sacred feminine into human consciousness.
Well, you know, that what you've just described there, when I've just watched the video, remember, there's no words in this. This is your high angelic sounds, but the symbolism they've just recounted, the colors of your dress, I'm thinking, you know, biblical prophecies and things like that. That was a lot of work, and especially done over a long period of time. There's the continuity factor, you know, when you left off, where did you start again? But this is flawless. This is a beautiful, beautiful video. Mm-hmm. How can people find out more about you, and can they buy your album, or can they get music from you? How do they do that?
Yes, you can buy it. It's iTunes, Amazon. You can stream. It's distributed everywhere worldwide. It's on Pandora. It's on Spotify. It's everywhere. And you can check my work on my website, kaliani.com, kaliyani.com, or meet me at Facebook or Instagram. Kaliani Sundari is my name in social media. And, we can connect there. And Stargate Alliance is my production company. You can go to stargatealliance.net to see some of the work I've done in the past.
Okay, so there's a variety of ways to get a hold of you. I'm going to tell everybody be cautious. There's another name out there that is spelt similar to Kaliani, and it's not. It's not Kaliani. So be very careful. It's Kaliyani or Kaliyani. So be very careful that you type in the correct name. And also go to the website and to Around the World. You will not regret a purchase here. If you go to YouTube and you see the sample of this work, it's AAA as far as I'm concerned. And so we've come to the we're just a little bit for an hour. If you get enough time to stay around for another 10 or 15 minutes, my dear.
Yes. Definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for everybody out there, we have the switchboard. Paul's not here to operate it, and we've had a problem with the studio platform that we're trying to correct. And I've seen several people, about 8 or 10 of you, have popped on, and then you've been knocked off. I'm not sure if it's an internal problem or it's a computer problem. I apologize for that. There's a couple of people here, and sometimes people just listen in the queue. And I'm going to take a chance and open up a microphone and say, somebody in the 208 area code, and there's somebody in the 570. If you're just listening, or if you'd like to ask Kaliani a question, so 208 first. Hello, you're on the air. And can I have your first name and where you're calling from?
Michael from Idaho.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Kaliani?
Yes. How did she come to be a great singer of spiritual things?
Did you get that, Kaliani? We're having a little bit of a breakup here, a little chop here. You wanted to know how you got to be the singer of these wonderful songs. I think a lot of hard work myself, but...
Well, it's the inspiration that came, if you were listening to the story. I don't know. I did not know that I had this voice, but I feel that when the Spirit calls us and there is a passion to give it a voice, I think we have to give it a try. And sometimes by just letting go of the program that tells us if we're not trained and if we're not years of practice that we're not going to be good at it. It's just something we need to let go of, because in modern day paradigm, everything is possible if your heart is in the right place. And if you're doing this for the highest good of yourself and others, and it's you're burning with this beautiful desire to do something good in the world, and you shouldn't doubt yourself. I feel that when I got the program out of the way, trust me, I was resisting for a while. I had people come to me in my house and say, I heard you recorded a song, can I hear it?
Wow.
And at that time, I could not hear the song without sitting down because my knees would buckle, and I couldn't keep my eyes open either. So I would just sit on the couch and say, sure. I would put the CD and play it, and they would, in the middle of the song playing, they would grab my arm, and they would be crying, or somebody would sob. I had a few people in my presence cry and say, this voice is speaking something that I cannot speak myself for. I feel like I've been waiting to hear this all my life. And some people said, you can't keep this to yourself. And I said, no, I'm not going to release it, because this is to go on a documentary. I'm not a singer. I said, yes, you are. And they had to literally convince me that this was not something I was meant to keep, that I had to release it into the world. And I was kind of intimidated by it. Does that mean I have to produce many of these? I don't know if I can keep going, you know? And this is something I just had to let go. I said, you know, I did it, and I'm going to give it a nice canvas, which is to honor this beautiful creation, co-creation with spirit, and I'll see whatever comes. I just stay open. That's why I call myself an accidental singer, and I'm also like a singles singer. I don't know when it's going to be my last one, but I only release one at a time.
Michael, do you have another question?
Yeah?
Yes. At what age? I didn't get to hear the whole story. I called on and waited, and the website's not working.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. It was knocking. There were about 12 or 14 callers here, and they were coming in, and yourself included, and the platform's not letting the switchboard work tonight. We've already complained. Paul's taking it in hand, so I apologize, Michael, and for everybody else that's been there and been knocked off, we're terribly sorry about this. We'll try to have it fixed next week. But I have another question. Yeah, go ahead.
At what age did she feel that her spiritual path was leading her to such things like singing and expressing her spiritual gifts, spiritual being?
Well, I was very spiritual from a very young age. Like the first memory I have of conscious memory of myself is my mother teaching me how to do the sign of the cross, and I was in a crib. And from that day on, I was always very curious about spiritual world and spiritual reality. I did hands-on healing in my teen years. I used to take people's headaches away. I was not interested in things that teenagers were interested in. I was interested in the mystical side of life. It was part of my, you know, in a vulgar way of speaking, my personality. I was just, it's just who I was. And I studied different philosophies and religions. And then it wasn't until the dissolution of my marriage in my late 30s that I had these huge experiences, beautiful transformational direct experiences of the divine and the form of the Bodhisattva Kuan Yin appearing in my life and many beautiful things that happened there. And I became, I felt called to sing, to honor that presence in my life, in a way of saying that, yeah. So it was like late in my life. I was in my 40s when I started singing. So I would say, don't ever doubt. It's never too late to follow your dreams. You could be 80 and start dancing. There's many stories of people who started following their dreams at a very late age and became extremely successful. So...
Well, I did not know that about you until you just mentioned it, that you did some spiritual laying on of hands. That's very interesting.
Someone? Oh,
when
yeah.
When you were taking people's headaches away, this is good. We teach that as well. So how did that just spontaneously happen, or how did you come to that?
Well, I had a sense that, you know, I could heal people, and that everybody can heal people with their energy and their hands. And I asked my mother to make me a member of a book club. My 14th birthday, I believe, 14th, 15th, I can't remember. And I started buying all these books that I didn't have access to before. And one of them was Barbara and Brandon's book, Hands of Light. And it's all about the auric field and healing with your hands. And I was fascinated by it. So I wanted to try it out. And I was very successful at it. There was never one person that I put my hands on that their headache didn't go away. It's not like I had a sign on the door. I was going to school every day. I was prepping for college. But if anybody had a headache in my house, that would not be a problem.
I love it. As Doug was saying earlier, there's no such thing as coincidences, you know. So We've lost the two. We've lost the 508 caller. We've lost the 914. We lost the 917 callers. So, Michael, you got room to ask another question. You seem to be lucking out here tonight.
Oh, wow. I remember what you said, Douglas, about a lot of spiritual beings come in, are born, and they live their lives like normal human beings. And at some point later in their life, they start developing more of their spiritual gifts, more of their spiritual presence. And I can relate with that, and I would like to know, that would be my question also.
Okay, I'm going to preempt that one, Michael. She did, Kellyanne did mention that, how it, after some situations in her life, that it was later in life that she, if I can use the term in a vulgar way, woke up and discovered this ability. But she had a mystical experience where it was almost a Shamanti experience, where she went way out to the center of the cosmos. That's if you don't mind me saying it that way, Kellyanne. She went to the center of the universe as a young child and came back and had some terror and apprehension, and of course was, didn't want to tell anybody about it. And then as years went by, I'm just bringing you up to speed, Michael. I'm not trying to talk for this lovely lady.
Yeah, thank you.
And so that might answer the question, that she had those experiences. But as we all have, I was relating to some experiences I've had. I know Doug Bentley has had experiences. I know you've mentioned a few on your own. We've spoken to you in a previous time. So, yes, there seems to be a plan. And somewhere in the plan, there's these mystical, spontaneous experiences. Then there seems to be some tragedy or setback in life. And then it resets people back on the spiritual path, which, if you will, is where they were supposed to be anyway. It kind of, you know, I'm not talking specifically of Kellyanne. I'm speaking generally now. But it seems to fit everybody who has divine abilities, natural abilities. They've had previous experiences where they've been in the Holy Land, or they've been in temples, or they've been in Atlantis, or they've been in Egypt with Ra Ta, and on and on it goes. And so that memory is still there. And sometimes people remember it as a child, which was talked about a little bit tonight. And then other times it's like something just horrific happens, and the person just about faces and changes their life, if that answers the question.
Yes.
Okay, any more? We've got a few more minutes left in the show here. Maybe Jack has a question too, or Doug might have another one, but Michael, you got one last one?
I'm thinking about her visions. She's had, how many people she's had contact with that wanted to ask her about visions?
Well,
in their lives.
Oh, Kellyanne does music, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, something beyond the music, I think. If she's ever had times when people have wanted to access her spiritual gifts, we have seeing things and feeling things.
I'm not able to make out the question because the sound is not so clear. Can
okay.
you
Michael wants to know
reword
if you were,
it for me, Michael?
Yeah, Michael wants to know if people, when you were doing laying on his hands, or were you able to see visions or help them intuitively? I think that was the question.
Yes.
Is that right, Michael?
Sorry. Yes,
close.
That's right.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Intuition.
When I was doing what? Healing with
when
my
you were
hands?
Doing spiritual okay. healing, Michael wants to know if you were able to, I think you answered this question before, that you're not clairvoyant, but Michael was wondering
no,
if you were able to see things.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I did answer that before. I don't have the gift of seeing auric fields. You don't need to have that to heal people. So don't get that discourage you. I just knew that, you know, I could. And I think one of the prerequisites for a healer, of course, somebody needs to want to heal as well. Some people use their disease as a crutch, unfortunately, because they get attention. And when people, you know, go with subconsciously, they don't want to heal. No healer can heal them. But when somebody honestly wants to heal, and you have the belief that you can without a single ounce of a doubt, which is how I was. You know, I never doubted that I could. And because of that, it would take just seconds. I didn't have to do much. I had a certain process where I would put my hands in front of their forehead and the left hand on the back or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I would sweep my hand over the crown. And then I would shake my hands into the ground. And I would do that a few times just to shake off the energy into grounding and releasing whatever tension and whatever miasmic or attachments or knots, whatever was there that was creating heaviness. And I would just let it go. And it was quick. It was like no more than 5 minutes. Hmm. So it's this this lack of doubt or certainty that you can that makes it possible in my experience.
I agree wholeheartedly. I got to jump in with that one. And Doug Bentley is a very good healer as well, and he's a minister. We talk about, number one, doubt stops at the door. And so when you have no doubt, you know, that's the act of faith. Faith is built upon belief, and belief is built upon evidence. And when you have constant evidence of seeing people healed, and you're basically taking away the bad thought forms, the attachments that you mentioned, et cetera, and there's no doubt, that's power. And just to be able to do that, as you said, doesn't take a long time. But you did add the condition that people would expect to be healed. They would want to be healed.
Yeah.
You don't want to come. No, don't touch me. I'm on workman's compensation. I don't want to be healed. I don't have to go back to work. No, thanks.
Yeah, right.
You've had that. So anyway, thank you, Michael. We're just about at the end of the show here. Thank you. You were lucky to get through. Somebody in the 608 was just there. I apologize. You came onto the switchboard and they bounced you. I'm terribly sorry for that for everybody. We'll try to get this fixed next week. Jack, would you have a question or before we go?
I have a question.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have a question for you, Douglas.
Of course.
You know, you promised me that you would tell me what do you think it means that you heard me sing.
Okay.
In your dreams before you met me 5 years ago.
Or even longer. Flat out. I had, and this is not me just saying this for the first time, many people have heard me talk about a blonde lady coming who had an angelic voice. They weren't words, and it was high, lofty vowel sounds, I would call them. We thought at first it was sort of like a Celtic kind of music, and I heard this so clear in my mind. It was like I was in a theater and the person was on the stage, and there was all black behind and just the person dressed in a white dress, long blonde hair, very attractive, very, you know, angelic looking, and singing. And the sounds were to amplify the spiritual healing that we were doing for large groups of people. And it was this person was the first person to come. Then there's supposed to be two other people who will come later. And then there's supposed to be 100 people that will come after that. But this person came, and this was the sound was what lifted up the sick people to the higher states of mind, or virtue energy, we call it now. And because that's, you know, in Luke that Jesus called the spiritual healing that left him, he called it virtue. He felt virtue come out of him, as you probably know that. So we've adopted that name. And so when I heard you singing, I think you're that woman.
Oh, wow. That is amazing.
You have the ability, either working with groups of people on your own, or maybe when we do bigger things here, because I'm on my way to Texas, when we do bigger things, that you might be helping us in person, or if you don't mind, we'll play your YouTube at our next church service and see what happens. which is our Zoom virtual service. So if you don't mind, if I have your permission to use that, that would be great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, and this is not new. I've said this to people. There's a lady coming who has, especially looking in that certain way, but having that high, lofty sound. And when I heard the video and I heard this, I thought, this is it. So anyway, we'll see what happens. But it might not have anything to do with me personally or my church or our crusades or our hope conferences that we're establishing. I've traveled the world. We've been in many countries where we do miracle transformation events similar to the spiritual healing that you're talking about, in this almost the same way. We do the same things. We've been the people that are there, especially Spain. From San Sebastian in the north to Madrid to Barcelona to Granada, to Garucha, to Oaxaca, to Alicante, to other places all across Spain. We were there doing spiritual healings. And so it's interesting, there's some Spanish blood, Portuguese blood, you know, in yourself. So I'm listening to another coincidence, you know.
So. Very close by. I actually visited for the first time Spain in 2021, in November, I went to Garabandal, where the miracles happened. Do you know about the three girls the apparitions of Mother Mary to them? It was
Fatima.
Really beautiful. Yeah, well, it was Fatima is Portugal. I went to Fatima as well, but Garabandal, Spain, is an extraordinary miracle place, and it's untouched. Which
is that right near Madrid? Or just is that sort of near
Madrid?
No,
it's northeast near the coast, the little village on top of a mountain. It's Santander,
in the Basque Country county.
Yeah, Santander, northeast.
I've been there. I've been to the Basque Country.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary story, and it's very worthwhile. There's much. Actually, these girls were filmed. There's a lot of footage. There's more than 4 hours of footage and more than 3,000 apparitions, apparently, over the course of, I think it was from 19, it ended in 65. It was from, maybe 61 to 65, a period of 4 years or something. Yeah. And one of them, at least one or two, are still alive. Yeah. Conchita.
Well, some more similarities taking place here. Mother Mary has appeared to me three on three occasions, and I'm not Catholic.
Oh, wow.
So, but
wow.
my wife, when she was alive, her family were all Catholics, and she was very devout and went to the local Catholic church here. And my father-in-law was a Knights of Columbus kind of guy, but my children are all baptized. Catholics. But anyway, that's very interesting. So I'm seeing a lot of parallels here, but the most important, the initial intriguing thing was your voice. And you've got special things to do in the world with that voice. So
thank you.
We'll talk some more. And we're going to have you back on the Zoom in the not too distant future, and let people listen to some more of your not only beautiful music, your beautiful soul, because you're singing from the heart. You have a whole open heart chakra, if you will, and that's what I'm looking at. This is coming from deep within you. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I am intrigued. So.
And I probably should get a reading with you.
Anytime.
You're amazing too.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. I appreciate that. But we will certainly do something else and talk about your music, because if you're this person that I was given this divine vision of, I think it's closer to 10 years. But we'll investigate it somewhere. I know we're live on air, and I'm getting carried away with this that we've kind of found you, and we just love your music. Everybody that I've sent it out to. several people in our organization, Many Mansions Spiritual Center, and we have a, anyway, I'll go into that another time. For now, you've just been absolutely a pleasure to have on the air. I'm going to give Jack or Doug a time to chime in here if you have a last question to talk to this lovely lady. Jack, Doug?
I have another comment. It's a general comment, and I just think in more than one level, in more than one way, we are so blessed to be to be alive at this point in history, where it's a troubled time, it's a time of change, it's a time of challenge, but it's an opportunity to help so many people, and through the electronic medium, the digital medium, the telecommunications, we can help everyone in the world, and that is such a blessing. Previously, in until relatively recently, we would have to travel great distances, and help speak in little groups, and help a few people at a time. But now, if we have a gift, and you have a gift, you can help so many people. And again, I'm going to use this word. It's such a blessing. That's all I can say.
Well said, Doug. Any last word, Jack? Go ahead.
I'm just really grateful for your comments, and I just hope to keep listening to the directive, you know? Whatever service I'm meant to provide, that the doors may open, that I may be able to walk through it, you know?
Well, what just pops in my mind is that your life is a life of faith. Your whole steps have been one step of faith. And listening to some of the incremental changes in your life. So, you know, you've obeyed the divine. That's quite complimentary about your faith. And, you know, from where you came as a child to where you are today on your way to being a superstar, you know, this is, it's a life. It's a life. I'm going to ask Jack one last time if he has any comments to make. Otherwise, we're just about out of time to the show here. Okay, well, we're going to have the opportunity to interview Kellyanne on the Zoom, and Jack is the producer of that particular Global Village podcast. So we will get to do that soon, I hope. And listen, again, it's been wonderful to have you on the show here today. You know, I've just been listening, and I find a lot of the things that you said would probably be inspiring to a lot of people, you know, that have had similar experiences. And there's always those things that happen, you know, metaphysically or spiritually or whatever, and we all, you know, we're a little embarrassed to say things. You know, Jesus appears to somebody, or Mother Mary appears to somebody, and everybody, they keep that quiet, you know, don't tell anybody, but, you know, Mother Mary appeared to me. I saw her face in the mirror, or I saw her face on the ceiling, or I looked at her picture and she was looking back at me. Oh my God. And I said, that's how it's supposed to be. You know, the saints are watching over you. But anyway.
That's right. That's right. No need to hide.
No, as a matter of fact, for everybody listening, you should witness. You should tell people you see these things. You don't have to brag. You don't have to make a big deal, but you should say it because this is an act of faith. And if a divine being appears to you, it's a privilege. This is my opinion now, my friends. It's a privilege that they've appeared to you. It's not that you discovered them. They appeared to you for a reason. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you know, fess up and say, you know, okay, mommy, daddy, you know, I saw this nice lady. She looks like that lady in the picture over there, you know, with a little cross on her chest. You know, and mommy or daddy might say, don't be silly. You know, that you're just having a nightmare dream or whatever. Don't worry. Just go, okay. But I encourage you, all kinds of people, especially in our community, to witness. Because when you witness, that brings it down into the truth. And so I'm getting in the podium right now. I'm starting to preach, so I'll step back off and say, I want to say thank all the listeners here. Thank you very much, Kellyanne. It's been an amazing interview tonight. We've enjoyed the music that we played on this show. I'm sure, even though we're having some technical difficulties with the callers, so we apologize to people. There's been about 10 or 12 people, a long list of people trying to get on the show tonight to talk to you. And I'm terribly sorry about that. But next time, we'll make sure. To my listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Global Village. Our special thanks go out to our incredible guest, Kellyanne, for sharing her wisdom and passion with us. And to my wonderful co-host, Doug Bentley, for making his conversation so enriching. Remember, we're all part of one global family. I want to thank Jack for being the co-producer here tonight. And also for our good friend, Paul, who has done the lead-in here and the show closing for us tonight prior to his commitment with his family. Thank you very much, Paul, for doing that. You're probably listening on your cell phones out there right now, somewhere in Kentucky, no doubt. Remember, we're all part, my friends, of one global family, and each episode brings us closer to understanding the beauty of human connection. Until next time, stay inspired, keep exploring, and take good care of yourselves and our one Earth. This is Douglas James Cottrell saying I wish all health, wealth, and peace of mind. Until next time, may God bless you with peace and plenty. Good night, my friends. We'll be right here, same time, same channel, as soon as I can find the right button to push here, and I'll say good night. God bless. Thank you, Kellyanne. Kellyanne.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Global Village Online Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley. Brought to you by MindProbe Publications and Productions, a division of Douglas James Cottrell & Associates, Incorporated. Copyright 2023, Douglas James Cottrell. No part of this broadcast audio may be reproduced in whole or in part without expressed written permission.